thought all alcohol was banned in Qatar.
Not in pubs. It's not allowed in the grounds. You can still have it in places.
Well, arguably. I would argue that it has been banned in Qatar because the only beer you can get is Budweiser, which isn't actually a beer.
Are we starting this pod?
Can we go through the whole pod without talking about the World Cup? What are we doing?
No.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Let's do it. Crazy about reality, but it's still the only place to get a decent meal. Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Same Old Wombles. Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us responsible for bringing you yellow and blue back in the day. We are non-affiliated and non-partisan with Same Old Wombles. The number 9 shows you've lived and learned. You're engaged with your life in a meaningful, conscious manner, and you're setting rewarding goals. My name is Mark Lewis. I'm old enough to have seen Francis Joseph play first time around. Rest in peace, Francis. Go, Joe. Have a go. Much love and condolences to Roger and all of the Joseph family from everyone on Same Old Wombles. Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor, Matt Cooper, and Niall Cooper. On tonight's show, 9 unbeaten, bit of a rant of the week about lower league football, and best ever Wimbledon International 11. And of course, some numbers, because where would we be and how would Adam cope without some numbers? Welcome to episode 14.
Oh, Mark, beautiful as ever, but you clearly are on something. I just want to see, can you hold up the book where you're getting these quotes from? I just want to see where you're getting all this information from. Is it a calendar?
Mobile phone, the internet,
is it a book? Is it, yeah. And the most reliable of places then. That's good. You're making stuff up. It's beautiful though.
No, I'm just trying to make sure I get a Groucho Marx quote in every single introduction.
I am somewhat disappointed that the stalkingness has passed, because I'm kind of like, you know, I just kind of see Marx obviously... favoured profession should be as a spy or a stalker. Very similar professions, admittedly, but I'm just kind of like disappointed that we haven't got, like, you know, I don't know, something about Matt, about how his daughter's actually Queen Elizabeth II, that sort of thing, you know?
I sincerely hope she isn't, because there's something I need to tell you about Queen Elizabeth II.
God, is it the dead thing, Matt?
That's the dead thing.
It's the dead thing. Sorry about that.
Bless her.
So yeah, actually, Matt, I'll let you in that your daughter is in fact not Queen Elizabeth II. It's just for those who obviously are never going to see the picture on Matt's mantelpiece, for which Mark is completely convinced that it is Queen Elizabeth II, whereas we've revealed to Mark that it's in fact Matthew's daughter Tabitha.
Wearing like cat ears, so I can see where there's the confusion there. That was Queen Elizabeth II's favourite pose. What I'm loving the most is that no one can see us on here, but Adam is just dead. He's not woken up from his afternoon kip. That's how the same old Wombles we are.
Fabulous stuff. But actually, for a change, not even for a change, you know, isn't it so pleasant to actually be able to do a podcast when genuinely week after week, we're talking about encouraging things. We're not having to find a good thing out of a poor performance and savour a 0-0 draw away from home up north. But yet again, we kept a clean sheet. Yet again, we fairly convincingly, from what I can gather, won the game yesterday against Tranmere.
From what I understand, I think the first half, we were in control. It always feels like this way. In actual fact, when an opposition goes down to 10, they step up, so I think it becomes more difficult because they'll sit back and defend and catch you on the break. And we almost got undone. If it wasn't for Nick, confidence keeper Zanith, we would have, you know, who knows what could happen. It could have been a draw, but but we limited them to a lot. We limited them to hardly any chances.
I think I have to add to Matt that I think we have now found the proper nickname for Nick Zanef. Nick.
Confidence Keeper.
Confidence Cat. The Confidence Cat. That's what I want him to be known as. Yeah, he's the Confidence Cat.
He also gave the penalty away in the first place.
Yeah, which I had to explain to Matt why it wasn't the sending off, because the ball was definitely not going towards the goal when he took him out. But, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I wondered about that, actually, because I didn't watch the game yesterday because I had to work, which is also another reason why I was asleep this afternoon.
Sorry, you had to work. You worked yesterday, which is why you had to have a sleep.
An academic. I'm working the weekend. What's the world coming
exactly.
to?
Exactly. But I know. So I didn't get to watch I Followed, but my dad did watch it. And yeah, so I heard that Nick caused the penalty. But I just think, why wasn't he sent off? It's because the ball was being pushed, because the ball wasn't going towards the goal. That's it.
There you go. A perfect explanation. No, if the ball after that does not look like it's going to be a goal scoring opportunity afterwards, then it's not sending off. The ball was being kicked towards the byline. It would have been very difficult for one, but arguably where the player would have got the ball in the first place. And two, it would have been very, very, very tight angle to get anywhere near the goal from there. So that's why it was not sending off.
That's just bizarre.
Wrong. I think it was a yellow card because he took him out.
He didn't get one.
Yeah. But that's where I disagree. But like, you know, frankly, I'm a Wimbledon fan. So the referee had a blinder as far as I'm concerned. Apart from giving, you know, not ignoring it completely, which would have probably been a bit too much. But other than that.
We didn't see the sending off. I didn't see what happened at the sending off.
Nobody saw the sending off. The TV didn't see the sending off, and they even tried to joke about it when we were once again the last game on EFL highlights.
Yeah,
the angle on the I Follow thing, you couldn't see what had happened, but it was clearly a tussling. And yeah, my dad said he thought it was an elbow in the face, but after the ball had been sort of played,
I heard it was a around the neck shove pull down. A proper
wrestling move.
Yeah. If I knew any wrestling moves, I'd now quote something like the double switchback removal thingy or whatever it might be.
Listen, all you need to know is it's not what Hulk Hogan would have done. That's all our listeners need to understand.
I think this is where the 9 years podcast steps in, because I know Nick Draper, he loves his wrestling. He'd be able to tell us what move it was.
So Nick, when you see this posted on all the usual channels, we want a comment in there to explain what movie it actually was that took out Harry Pell. Because at the moment, and we're going with a double switchback removal reverse flip, which is probably not an actual technical wrestling move.
I don't believe that's an actual...
But, I have to say, what Chiz, I mean, is amazing. What an amazing goal. I think that other player scored for us. I don't think anyone's worth looking at him.
No, don't look at him now.
I think what I understand is he shinned it in. I can't even remember his name. There's Salil. So I don't think anyone needs to be looking at what he's doing, to be honest with you. You know, he's all right.
We're in this ridiculous position where we've won back-to-back games again. We've scored 5 goals in 2 games. So it's almost like you can't remember which goal we're talking about. You know, Chislett scored with his head. And I swear that was his first touch.
No, he said he scored once with his head at a previous club about 8,000 years ago.
But he's never scored. He's about 4'6", so of course he's not going to score with his head.
Mark, everybody to you looks 4'6". But those of you who don't know, Mark is normally known as Tall Mark for the reason that he's slightly smaller than this guy, but only slightly.
I have to say, I am absolutely terrified about the January window. I'm not just hearing about Assal, but I'm hearing people talking about Towler going back to City, and he's been playing amazingly recently.
So what we need to think of then is, I think it's our job as a podcast to start rumours about other players who are in fact not very good, on the famous Cole Court Jason Yule confusion. When Cole Court got sold, and everybody knows they should have bought Jason Yule because Cole Court wasn't actually that good. And Newcastle spent, was it 7 million on him?
But Bob Robson didn't know the difference, allegedly.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've No, I don't know. I don't think we should be going down that point of view, but I think we all agree that Hudlin has been amazing. And, you know, I think we'd all hate for him to go back or, you know, to be moved on. So, God, please don't, whatever you're doing, Huddersfield, don't recall Hudlin. That would just be, oh, God, it'd be a disaster.
I think realistically, all joking aside, if we're talking briefly about the Jan transfer windows, we will, I'm sure, in more depth in future pods. We tried to buy other players in the summer one and they didn't get over the line. So hopefully, if those players are still available, they will go over the line. Also, Tower came out of completely left field and he's never played as high as League Two, let alone anywhere else. He's never played more than two or three games in a row, from what I can gather. He played for Grimsby in the Conference before. So I don't see the benefit that I don't see him absolutely putting up trees so much so that Bristol City would suddenly put him into the top of League One, for example. But they might have done it next season, but realistically, they're mid-table, so leave him where he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'd loan him out to another club like that. I think, you know, and he's not Championship Bristol City, is he? So, but he is, you know, I think you'd hope they'd leave him with us. Assal will be sold at some point, fairly, you know, within the next 18 months. It's just literally when, I would have thought. I think we'd only sell him in the January transfer window if the bid was silly. You know, because we don't actually financially need to sell. And when we're sitting on the back of a 9-game unbeaten run, you can start seeing our defence behaving, you know, actually doing all right. You can look at Sal and Davidson and Chislett up front, and we've still got NYC to come back in. That suddenly I'm looking up the table thinking we're not that far off getting back into the playoffs or getting into that sort of situation. And, you know, it was a run when we got up, a late run that got us into the playoffs last time round, that got us up into League One the first time. So, you know, I'm looking at this team and thinking there is, you know, good scope. I think we've got Pelham Woodyard look solid as in the middle of the park now. And I think that was the big thing that we missed at the start of the season. We didn't have either of those. And that's basically turned it around, in my opinion. So I don't think we will sell a sow unless the money's stupid.
I think I agree with you, Nike, because I think we've learned from the Palmer incident last year, which is that we definitely have to have, if the sow's going in, it would need to be silly money. We would have to have options right there that we can move for straight away.
I'd also add that I would expect or hope that we may well have a head of football in by then who would be the one making those decisions anyway, or helping influence on those decisions, which we haven't had before. So I think that would be quite significant. And I think now that Johnny Jackson's got good people around him as well, they'll be looking at it and going, right, well, you know, why would I want to get rid of Hudlin? Yeah, nobody would want to get rid of Hudlin. We've got to keep Hudlin. Very important.
Yeah, we spoke about this earlier today. I mean, Adam, Mark, I know we think, how do you get NYC in this team now?
Well, I think if we decide to try and sneak on with 12 players, that could be the way to do it.
Yeah, that might be the only way. Yeah. Mark, what do you think?
Well, the interesting thing for me is I think we kind of lucked onto this formation of being able to fit in Magoma and Pell and Woodyard into the same midfield. And now Pell is the player that, frankly, if you played against him, you'd hate him. But if he's on your team, you absolutely love him. Now, I was refreshingly pleased that he'd given the chance for someone like Fisher instead of Chislett. Because up to a couple of weeks ago, Chislett, I thought, was phoning in his own performances and not really actually justifying the place in the team. But we had no one else to replace him with. The thing is, Chislett's now stepped up. He came off the bench, did excellently. His set pieces are superb. And he was really unlucky again not to get a third goal, not to get a hat-trick against Weymouth in the replay. And obviously, he popped up again yesterday with the important goal. So if he's now getting goals, and he's probably got as many already as this season as he did last season, then you've actually got a proper competition for places. So I don't see any justifiable reason for actually dropping Chislett or Sal or Pell right now, which means you're in a nice position to actually be able to ease NYC back into the team and not put him straight in and have to play him for 90 and expect him to score three goals and bamboozle his centre-back.
So I think it goes back to me. If you remember that when we had those the four centre-forwards, which I think was Akinfenwa, Taylor, Aziz, and who was the other one?
Elliot.
Right. Four quality centre-forwards, and we could just rotate. And it actually didn't really matter too much which of those four started in the top in the front two. You know, if we can get into a position like that where you've got such a depth and having NYC, Davidson, you know, you've got Sal, Chisler, all the rest of it, suddenly becomes like there is a really good competition for those top players, you know, and it will be difficult to fit them all in. I was saying to Matt yesterday when we were talking about it, that you then start thinking, well, does Paris play? You know, do you say, right, we'll have Sal and Chisler on the wings, you have Davidson and NYC up front and Pellin Woodyard in the middle, and there's no place for Paris?
Well, then you're changing formation. Then you're actually going back to an old-fashioned 4-4-2.
Which is not a bad thing for us, though, sometimes.
But no, all us old-school team at Wobbles love that. But I think the way they're playing at the moment with the cover that Pell has, basically to roam wherever he wants to roam, although, as my daughter's pointed out, there is a Pellometer, like a swingometer on election nights. He's either absolutely excellent, as he was against Orient, or for at least the first 30, 40 minutes against Weymouth in the replay, you wondered whether it was on the pitch. But then it swung back the other way, and then second half, it was excellent. And as a result, so did this team. But if he can keep his form and his actual concentration level, then excellent. But I think, unfortunately, and he's managed to dance on that tightrope, but Pell's been on four yellow cards for, I think, the last three games. So at some point, we're going to have to play without him. And obviously, NYC is a fine player, but he's not the same kind of brick outhouse as Pell is.
Yeah. I was going to say that. I think that is, I do think we have some, okay, we're doing really well at the moment, and which is great. And I think we predicted that we turned around. But we've got a formation that's working that sticks a cell in a particular place. But if you take him out of the squad, we suddenly start to have real problems. And so I don't want us to sell a cell at this point, but I think we need to think about who could we get in to make sure that we can kind of stick with the formation, because it's kind of working now, actually, even though it's a bit of a weird formation. But we don't have many options, and so I am a little worried that we're kind of going to be, we might be in trouble if we can't have some swap out still. And so I wonder if we need to look for more kind of sprightly winger players in the January transfer window. I'm not sure. I don't know, but I think our formation is working. I think the guys are gelling together really well right now. I don't think we want to mess with that, but I don't see that we've got any depth to, if we get more yellows or if someone gets injured, we could be in a bit of trouble.
And that's the case with everybody in League Two. It's always the case that, you know, if you get a number of injuries, then anyone in League Two is going to suddenly be struggling. You know, that is, I think, the reality with it. And we've had bad seasons in recent years simply because we've been, we've just had, you know, when you get a couple of injuries, that's it. You know, you can just lose that. I can think of every single time we've had a bad season, you put it down to we had a disproportionate amount of injuries and we've never really had the depth. I mean, that even goes up to the Premier League days. The year we got relegated, we had Thatcher and Earl out for nearly the entire, from like Christmas onwards. And, you know, those are two would have, you know, really, really, really high quality players from way back then. And that, for me, was the reason we went down that year. Because, you know, with those two in the team all the way through, we would have easily stayed up. The irony of that one is Ben Thatcher, because Ben Thatcher should have got sent off when he elbowed Nicky Sonomabe, for those of you who remember it, right? We won that game 1-0, but later on in that game, Thatcher broke his ankle, broke his foot, and didn't play for the rest of the season. Right, so had he got sent off, he wouldn't have broken his foot. But because the referee didn't see it, and that very famous elbow, you know, I think that is, that in itself is the reason we went down.
Divine retribution.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, yeah, true. But, you know.
Okay, I'm going to move us on because I know we could talk about our successful winning run for a long time because it's been successful in winning, hence the reference to nine in the opening. But I'm going to move us on to a little rant of the week myself. And my little rant of the week actually is focusing specifically on lower league football and the fact that apparently, according to certain media outlets, who are obviously so completely obsessed with something going on in the Middle East that we discussed last week, shouldn't be going on whatsoever, but apparently this is the most important thing going on, and football therefore has stopped domestically, completely stopped, and nobody seems to care about that whatsoever. But actually, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I actually can remember, there are 92 clubs that play professionally here in league football in England and Wales. And of those 92 clubs, 46 are still playing. 46 are still playing in League One and League Two. And we know the defending might not be all that. And we know there could be some crazy old goals. And there's some interesting stadiums and some very interesting refereeing either way. And we're doing relatively well overall right now. But actually, if you're living in Preston, or if you're living somewhere near Lancaster, or if you're living somewhere in Bristol, or if you're living somewhere in Liverpool or Manchester, there's plenty of league football going on right near you, very close to you, probably that much more down to earth, probably that much more straightforward for you to get to and much easier for you to get to. So get out there and actually make an effort. Go and see your local club. Don't be disappointed whatsoever once again by the corporate person on your doorstep from a Fulham or Chelsea or Man United or Arsenal or Tottenham that isn't playing for the next month. Don't worry about that. Just go and see your local club. I happened to tune into BBC London yesterday afternoon, who did a good report, obviously, for our game. But they were actually reporting, I think it was an FA Trophy game from Hanwell Town. Couldn't tell you where Hanwell Town was, but well done to BBC London because they actually properly follow all the football around the country, all around the London southeast area. And they were properly following all the games, Dagenham against Bromley. They were following Dorking Wanderers as well, obviously following our game. Reporting on the Charlton game, which I did find quite amusing for Charlton to be probably the next team likely to sack their manager. But what they were doing is they were properly following local football, as every local radio station and any kind of football information provider should do. And what's going on in Doha for the next month or so will interest a certain number of people. But actually, for the rest of us that just want to see local football played decently with local people being there and improving the local communities, then that's where it should be at. Get yourself down to your local ground. Obviously, we've got a number of games coming up. And I know that the ladies themselves also have a number of games in the local neighbourhood. And well done to the ladies. The ladies played this afternoon against the women, excuse me. Zero and the women played and won at Fulham away in a cup competition. I believe it's one of the first games that Fulham women have played at Craven Cottage. And we beat them 3-1. So well done again. Once again, the women's team are punching well above their weight. But again, example of local community clubs playing in the local communities, and they should be supported by the local communities. And actually, everyone else that does follow whatever type of big, in inverted commas, club normally, day in, day out, actually, for the next month or so, you've got football on your doorstep, whether it's a non-league game, whether it's a lower league, League One, League Two game, get yourself out there, support your local team, whoever they may be, and you may well be pleasantly surprised by the standard, by the quality of the pies, by the cheapness of the beer, and by the friendly welcome you may all get. That's my rant of the week.
And well said, Mark. Well said. I mean, I agree. I think what I was frustrated about the fact that there was no mention really on the BBC yesterday at all about League One and League Two. I was nervous, but the ITV did do their highlight show, which was good. I mean, the commentary for the games is just completely random. No idea how people get that job, but that was really good. And obviously, it's a time for the women's game has been given a profile through it as well, because you know there's a lot of profile now if those games are shown live on TV. It would be quite nice if a League One or League Two made terrestrial TV during this time, but I guess we're up against something, aren't we? In this huge World Cup that's going to be happening over the next month.
I think what's interesting about that, and I think another reason why it should be more focused on League One and League Two, is there's also quite a lot of people that are like, because of the politics of Qatar and because of what's happening there, are either not watching it at all, for which there are, I know, quite a few people like that, or they're not as interested as normally would be. And I think one of the classic ways of noticing that is in a normal World Cup year, how many houses would be covered in St. George's crosses? How many cars would be driving around with those little England flags hanging outside of it? How many pubs and all that would be absolutely completely advertising like crazy the World Cup? And I've just not seen that. It just doesn't feel like it's really captured the imagination. I think there's a kind of bit about this World Cup's just a little bit tainted and not quite. I mean, also, this, because we've had the Premier League, it's not had the build up and stuff like that. So, yeah, Mark's just making a little bit, maybe slightly. It's, and you'll know I could talk quite a lot about how tainted the World Cup is, because it's, I mean, a lot.
No, it's all that thing. It's all the stuff that's gone on with it is awful. But I think for a lot of people, it's also moving it to the winter. It's just like, I think people have just gone like, you know, it's a summer competition. The season ends and there's a 4-week build up, and there's all the stuff that goes with that, and everyone gets that excitement, stuff like that. And you know, obviously our season is continuing. Our season would have ended, so you'd be going, you know, it's great, I've got football to watch over the summer, but we've got competing, you know, we've got on Tuesday, I don't know who, you know, obviously it's a weird one, isn't it, because we don't like the Pizza Cup, and there's a World Cup going on. What would you choose to watch? Would you choose to watch us versus Sutton, or I think Germany might be playing on the same sort of time?
Oh, obviously you choose to watch us, but as much as we hate the pizza, even in the Pizza Cup,
it's the Pizza Cup. Yeah,
but the FA Cup this weekend, you know, the game's at 3, right? So yeah. I think that might cross over a couple of World Cup games, and there are going to be some people who want to watch both things.
The World Cup in winter is just, let's just forget all the other stuff, right? Winter is just wrong. It's just wrong. It's like, it should be a summer fun. It's the close of the season. We watch the international game. It's just backwards. It's backwards.
Adam, what I really want to do at this moment is just, I know normally Mark does this sort of stuff, but I'm quite interested in doing a little kind of quiz around the table, not a quiz, but like just go around and see whether we can go around the screen and just see whether every one of us can name a thing that's wrong with the Qatar World Cup, and keep going around until we run out of options, because I think we could go on for quite a while. So yeah,
there's not that long, Matt.
See how far we can get, because I think it'll probably take about 3-4 minutes doing this. So I've got Matt, Adam, Mark, me, right? Matt, one thing wrong with the Qatar World Cup. First thing.
I'm going to start with women's rights.
Women's rights. Okay, Adam.
Oh, migrant workers.
Mark.
I'll go with LGBTQ+ issues.
Right, okay. I'm going to go with just the fact environmentally they're doing massive air conditioning things and it's in a bloody desert. Matt.
It's the size of Qatar. It's the size of West Yorkshire. So it's just how do you get everyone in like different spaces to their hotels? The general size of it.
Adam?
Well, I think the bid team didn't know what football was until they decided to bid for it, from what I understand.
Mark, go on.
Talking about the bid team, I understand he may have been tainted, but I understand Mr. Sepp Blatter, the former FIFA president, has actually admitted that there were bribes taken for Qatar to even be awarded it in the first place.
That's allegedly, by the way.
Allegedly.
I'm going to go with the big redhead conspiracy, the fact that obviously being a redhead in Italy is equal to the level of discrimination you get as an LGBTQ plus person in Qatar, which, by the way, carries the death penalty. So just saying that, very much like being a redhead in Italy. Thank you, Infantino, the president of FIFA, for that particular line. Matt, have we got any more?
The fact it's in the winter rather than the summer.
All right. Adam?
Oh, I don't know now. No, I'm completely lost. It's just wrong, for goodness sake. The fact they had no stadiums there prior to They had to build all the stadium.
Mark,
do you want to talk about the whole issue with sponsors and with alcohol? I mean, football doesn't have to go with alcohol. Alcohol doesn't have to go with football. But if you accept Budweiser, who allegedly do make alcohol, as one of your main sponsors, and then 48 hours before the first game, say, oh, no, no alcohol allowed to be served, that's just beyond ludicrous.
Right. I might go with the 15,000 construction workers who've died. So that might be a good one to mention.
I think Adam mentioned that one already.
He did, yeah.
I'll go on that one.
15,000. He mentioned the number.
But right. I think the fan zones, I've seen the pictures of the fan zone and they're quite large spaces. There are things to do, but the main area outside, there's no shade. You can get a pint of Budweiser. Why? But it would cost you £12. So you can get beer in these fan zones, but it's going to cost you £12.
Adam, we're going to run out soon. We're not going to run out. I mean, we could go on forever.
The treatment of journalists currently, from what I understand, particularly from countries like Iran.
Or like Denmark. All right. I'll do the last one. So apart from all of those reasons, it was a perfectly brilliant place to have the World Cup. But I was going to mention the other thing which I love most is the those bits on Facebook where they have all the fans arriving in there, all kind of like all those Brazilian looking fans and all those English looking fans who couldn't actually sing the English songs because they didn't know.
Rent-a-fan. Yeah.
Mark. They're real fans. They're not rent-a-fan. That would be wrong because that would be you'd be suggesting it was all like a big PR stunt. That would be wrong to say that. To say it's a big PR stunt because clearly the World Cup is not a big PR stunt.
I'm not following this. I'm obviously not following this stuff closely enough. But there was something about the fact they were asking whether there was fake England fans.
Yep.
Yeah, if you watch it, they do this whole thing of going to seeing different fans arriving, and they show the England fans, and it's clearly a whole load of Qataris dressed in England. It's just like it's.
Ridiculous. I mean,
they might be supporting England, but
they're not English, and along with all this, they also did.
It's coming home,
and that's another question for Nick Draper. So, Nick, on the other bit where you've now gone. What is the correct wrestling move? No, Nick Draper listens to this. Nick Draper listens to us. You know,
bless him.
There,
we've got a lot of name checks tonight.
I would say no. The other thing I'll just mention as the last is David Beckham being an ambassador for Qatar.
Quite right.
Taking millions.
How much money does that man need? Right, yeah. I'm going to move this shambles along.
Good.
Sorry, Mark.
Yeah, Noel's taking the show over. For goodness' sake, disgrace. It's Mark's show.
It's not my show. It's the same old one. It's never no individual show. So,
and I think show would be pretty much, it would be a loose term.
Yes, the show is a very loose term, absolutely. It's just a stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
So the next feature on our stream of consciousness tonight will be, and it featured a little bit in the programme recently, that wonderful programme sold by loads of volunteers around the ground, namely, let's try and put together between us, with a little bit of conjecture, the best ever international Wimbledon players 11. There are three rules for this, which Mr. Matt Cooper will tell us about.
Yes. Allow me to explain the three rules to this game. One, they must be full internationals. No B call-ups, no under-21s, no England C.
But no amateur internationals either, Matt.
No amateur internationals.
Rob Dale and Ray Armfield and all those people who are listening, sorry.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So it's got to be full internationals. They must have been called up whilst playing for Wimbledon, or IFC Wimbledon. The third rule, which is an important rule, I find, is they can't have played for franchise. So they can't be called up whilst playing for franchise, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to start with the keeper?
Yeah.
Is it the confidence cat?
I think there's two keepers, there's two goalkeepers which have played for Wimbledon, or IFC Wimbledon, and they have got called up. Neil Sullivan and Nick Zanef. So which would you have? The goalie who's playing League Two football, albeit, was it three clean sheets in a row? Or the goalie who's in the Premier League, is in front of it, Neil.
It's obviously Sullivan.
Neil. It's got to be Neil Sullivan.
Neil Sullivan makes it as our goalkeeper. And then defenders.
So these are 4-4-2, old school conventional team.
Of course, we go 4-4. Same old Wobbles. No, we're not going to go 3-5-2 or some Christmas formation.
We've got to go 4-4-2 for this. So the defenders are Terry Fearon, Warren Bunn, because he played half an hour whilst with us for England, Herman Hreiðarsson, Brian McAllister, Eric Young, Kenny Cunningham, and our World Cup representative, Chris Hoot.
Ah, you've got a load of people for right back there then.
Yes.
Okay.
We left back's easy, right? Terry Fearon.
Yeah. Okay. Fearon left back.
We agree with that. Terry Fearon left back.
Yeah. One of the centre backs, Eric Young.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a little archive clip the other day that was showing Wales of about 1989, I think. It's the penalty that Paul Bowden missed that would have gotten through to the World Cup final with Terry Yeoworth as manager and Eric Young playing centre-back with the headband.
Yeah, Eric Young, his first match, he got called up against Costa Rica in the May of 1990. That was his first call-up.
Someone's done some research.
He left to join Palace in the August of 1990. So I think he only played once or twice whilst he was with us. It counts.
Where's Cunningham? Where's Cunningham's position?
So I was going to say...
Cunningham's a right-back.
Well, Cunningham came to us as a right-back and then he went centre-back later in his career. But has Gunter actually played for Wales since he signed for us?
Ah. Oh,
good call. Did he play over the summer? He would have played over the summer, would he?
I don't think so. So I'm just going to
take a wild punt here. Wild punt that he wouldn't have made our back four anyway.
Oh, harsh.
It's a wild punt, but I'm just saying, so, possibly a player playing in the end of his career at League Two versus all the others who are Premier League players.
Yeah.
So we're saying to make this work possibly, we could have Kenny Cunningham as a centre back.
Oh, he's such a good player.
You've got to have Cunningham in there.
Okay, so you could have Fearon left back.
Cunningham was a right back. He was not a centre back.
I mean, no. I'm having Barton over Cunningham.
Yeah, I'm having Barton over Cunningham.
Well, obviously, yeah.
That's why I'm saying centre back.
Yeah. So,
because Barton's playing right back, you're putting Cunningham in centre back, even though he played most of his time for us as a right back.
But yeah, because I'm having Cunningham over Hreiðarsson.
You don't like Hreiðarsson. Oh, why don't you get some problem with
McAllister?
I mean, the thing you've got to understand is it's a defender. So just put them in the back four. Defender. Most of them kick with their right foot.
I'm a defender. You can't, as a fullback, playing centre back is a different game.
Hold on, wait a minute. Let me go to this point, left back Terry Fearon.
Yeah.
Right back Warren Barton. Yeah.
Yeah.
And centre back Eric Young. And so the other centre back alongside Eric Young, it's either Kenny Cunningham. And Mark, you're saying that Kenny played centre-back later in his career with us.
Later on in our career, when did Kenny Cunningham play centre-back for us?
In his last season in the Championship, as he is now.
I don't know, but I agree with Mark.
No, we had Mark Williams and...
Niall, I would have to say, I'd have to agree with Mark on this one, because the options are you have Kenny Cunningham, right? Or you have Herman Hreiðarsson.
Exactly.
Let's face some facts.
I mean, look, I'm not saying that I'd rather have Kenny Cunningham in my team than any of the others, because I clearly think Kenny Cunningham was a quality player. Just saying that he wasn't a centre-back. But, you know, fine, we're basically going to go with, as a managerial decision, we're going to put Kenny Cunningham out of position at centre-back next to Eric Young. That's what we're saying.
All I'm saying is apparently he played there once for us, and that will do me. So, our apologies
to the Hreiðarsson family and the McAllister family for the decision of not playing you because we're playing Kenny Cunningham out of position. It's like saying, let's play John Hartson. John Hartson at centre-back. I'm sure John Hartson probably plays centre-back at some point. Would you have John Hartson at centre-back rather than McAllister? And
I think you'll find if you had a choice, you would put Cunningham in that team.
Right, okay, we are putting Cunningham in the team.
Mark Lewis.
I think you'll find if you read Yellow and Blue, as I just have, then you'll find that Cunningham plays centre-back.
Who edited Yellow and Blue? Someone must have had an oversight on that. Who edited Yellow and Blue? Because someone must have had... Who edited it?
From ex-journalist.
No. Who edited Yellow and Blue? And put Cunningham as centre-back. Hey, No, Noel.
Should have just gone with the argument. There's four people at the back. They are defenders. Forget where they play.
I'm ignoring my brother's comment that he's saying
with
that.
Adam. Right. Okay, Adam. Move on. Midfield.
And this is. I think this is tough. So you've got Vinnie Jones, Glenn Hodges, Michael Hughes, Robbie Earl, Laurie Sanchez, Leon Hardson, and then you've got three outsiders for you to think about. I think we should get one of these in. Walid Badia, Kerry Hughes, or Stal Solbakken.
Stal Solbakken is clearly a massively underrated player and a legend in the world of Norwegian football. No, he's going nowhere near the team, is he?
Mark, what would you go with, mate?
Who is Laurie, by the way? Laurie Sanchez.
Laurie Sanchez.
The Ecuadorian. Or was he born in Belfast?
So, Laurie Sanchez. Where's he going now?
I think the way you're doing Northern Irish accents, the way you do Northern Irish accents, you have to always pretend you're Reverend Ian Paisley, and you've said, the people of Northern Ireland like to say no. And
that's it. And that, Laurie Sanchez.
Laurie Sanchez.
Before we get any more entirely inappropriate comments.
So what would you go with? Let's
go with the two that are definitely in, right? In my mind, Robbie Earl and Leon Hardson.
Yeah, obviously.
And Michael Hughes.
No, see, that's where we're going to get complicated. That's going to get complicated. Glenn Hodges.
No, Hughes is definitely in there.
I'd probably lean
towards Hughes over Hodges, but I don't think it's clear cut. Whereas I think Robbie Earl's clear cut, Leon Hardson's clear cut.
This is a mythical team, right?
Yes.
So what do you mean it's a mythical team? What? Well, what's your mythical team?
If it's not going to play, why can't we have three wingers in it?
Oh no! Look, we're having four midfielders, four proper midfielders in the proper places. So it's a proper team that you could put on the pitch, even though we have got Cunningham at centre back. But whatever.
Yeah, that's because we've taken advice from the former editor of Yellow and Blue. So I would say Leon Hardson, Robbie Earl. I'm going with Michael Hughes. Because he was an amazing player. So that leaves you. Do you go with Vinnie Jones or Glenn Hodges?
Or Laurie Sanchez.
Sanchez then for me, out of those three, I think.
Did you see Sanchez actually play for us, Adam?
Let me just go for what happened. I mean, Laurie Sanchez will talk about this if you ever talk to him. He would go onto the team would be announced, and he used to get like. He said years later, he used to get really pissed off because there'd be a massive groan when they went at number 10, Laurie Sanchez. And everybody would be like, oh, Laurie Sanchez. Like that. And it happened every time. Laurie Sanchez was a player who just made some tackles, passed the ball 1-2 yards to either side of it. And that's all Laurie ever did.
Yeah, but what were the three again? They're all like individual players, aren't they? That's the problem.
Vinnie Jones, Laurie Sanchez, or Glenn Hodges. If you play Glenn Hodges, then Leon Hardson has to go into the middle with Earl, which is not a bad thing. But I mean, he's more of a winger.
But wouldn't you say, I mean, Mark, what would you reckon?
You need someone in that team. You need someone to tackle. Leo was a great player, but he's a box to box. Robbie was a great player, but he's box to box. You know, their fortes were not putting in a defensive tackle. Sanchez would let the rest of that team play. You know, he'd give the ball to Hughes and let Hughes run with it. He'd give the ball to Leo and let Leo run with it. And he'd stick a 20-yarder onto Robbie Earl's head for him to head in the top corner. So basically, what
we're doing is here, is our debate, really, and this is a very controversial one, who is a better player for us, Sanchez or Vinnie Jones?
Yeah, so we're taking out Hodges from this.
No, we're not having that debate. We're talking about a team. We're building a squad.
Yeah, well, no, that's what we're saying. Sanchez or Vinnie Jones, because you're saying, I agree with Mark. Got Hughes on one side, Leon Hodgson on the other, Robbie Earl, obviously, because the greatest player ever to put on a Wimbledon shirt. And then who do you have next to Robbie Earl? You either have Laurie Sanchez or Vinnie Jones to win that tackle. Who do you say? And now, obviously, most famous is obviously going to be Vinnie. But is Vinny?
I just think he's too individual, Vinnie Jones. I just think he's too individual.
I don't know. He was.
Yeah, but Hoochie, you pick Laurie over Vinny.
I think so. Yeah.
He's a really. I mean, like Laurie arguably scored the two most important goals for us: the goal against Huddersfield and obviously the FA Cup winning goal.
I would go Mark De Bola out of point of interest.
But I mean, but, yeah. I mean, Mark De Bola's goal
thinking. Martha Bailey goal was actually vital for Wimbledon history.
Yeah, but in this
instance, really, I'll put that as
Vinnie Jones, club captain, did score some great goals. Put the ball about. I don't think he was that individual, to be honest with you. I think he played.
Vinnie Jones at Leeds United. The Leeds fans would say he was the greatest passer, one of the greatest passers they've ever had in a team that had Gordon Strachan in it, and was like actually really important with them at that time.
Which is why they, as soon as they got out of the what is now the Championship, they sold him away and replaced him with Gavin Custer, who can pass.
So what would you say? Okay, yeah, let's vote. Let's put it to the vote. Okay.
I am totally on the fence with this one because I think Vinnie Jones is like he was a captain. Most Wimbledon fans are going to say Vinnie Jones over Laurie Sanchez, but we're saying as a team.
Of course they are. 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right, okay.
And also, I've got to say that Adam and Tallmark are, in fact, up for Don's Trust board elections here, and this could be a pivotal moment in their entire campaign.
They're going
Vinnie Jones or Laurie Sanchez.
I'd also argue that Jones played in the Premier League and was with us longer in the top flight.
That is true. That is true.
So anyhow,
our captain?
I'm going to put all for Vinnie Jones. Hands up. That's two.
I'm abstaining, which is really bad.
Oh, Nada, you got to go. You got to choose.
What? So then no one's going to win then.
No.
If I abstain, then it's Vinnie Jones, isn't it?
So you're going Sanchez. So I'm sorry. Vinnie Jones makes our squad.
So I like our midfield though. Hughes, Jones, Earl, Lynn Hudson.
We have got Marcus Gale, John Fashanu, John Hartson, Effa the Cuckoo, David Connolly, Shane Smeltz, and Kwasi Appiah.
What a rogue collection.
So what we're saying, Appiah and what?
Appiah
and Smeltz.
Okay, so let's take...
They're not actually two bad players, to be honest.
It was great. I mean, that Shane Smeltz, he was, you know, he scored the first international goal as an AS Wimbledon player for New Zealand. So we're going to take out Shane Smeltz, David Connolly and Kwasi Appiah, which leaves us with...
I like Conley. I'll give
Marcus,
you that.
Marcus Gale, John Fashanu, John Hartson, Effa the Cuckoo. We've got to choose two from that four.
I was going to say, I love Gale and the Cuckoo just because I thought they were just such great players. So
it was Gale, Cuckoo and Holdsworth, wasn't it? Those three were playing together at that time. It's hard not to, though, have Fash. It's hard not to go Fash. And Hartson, right, was a good player, but wasn't fit enough for where he was playing for us. And so Hartson, and the one thing I like about Hartson is having interviewed those lot, Hartson really loves Wimbledon.
So that sways our podcast.
You know, he's he does in a way. It does a bit for me. Cause it's like, you know, I'm not going to actually, I probably wouldn't put Hartson in.
Okay,
my problem would be between the other three. So I probably would take Hartson out. But I'm saying
let's get rid of Hartson then. And let's say Gale, Fashanu.
No, but he was, I mean, this is so bad now. Why do we even choose this topic?
It's difficult.
Well, Hartson.
So, all right. I think there's only so much time we could spend on all of this, and Mark's already biting his nails because he's got a numbers thing to get in here. So, watch right. I mean, my thing with Gale, I guess, would be was he an out and out striker, or was he more on the wing? So, you know, who, and then you've got Fashanu and Cuckoo. Were they two similar? Fash, Cuckoo and Hartson. So, okay, right. Just off the top of your head, Mark, who would you go for? Your two.
I'd go with Fash and Gale.
Niall.
Oh man, I'm going to probably go Fash and Gale, even though I really like a Cuckoo and I really like Hartson. I'm going to go with Fash and Gale.
Adam.
Yeah, a Cuckoo and Gale.
Okay. Okay, so definitely Marcus Gale, then he's made it in. And I'm sorry, Adam, I'm going to have to go Fash as well. So Gale of Fash. In actual fact, I'm lying to you. In actual fact, my team, I picked John Hartson and John Fashton. So I wouldn't have put Gale in there, mainly because I think he would have been
But Fash makes it. So it's
Fash and Marcus Gale.
So what's that final 11, Matt?
So our final 11 is in goal, Neil Sullivan, Scottish keeper. Left back, Terry Finnan for Ireland. Centre back, Eric Young, Wales, alongside the famous centre back, Kenny Cunningham, which the yellow and blue editors has suggested is the right one. Right back, Warren Button for England. Right mid, Leo Haraldsen, Norway. Left mid, Michael Hughes, Northern Ireland. Centre mid, Robbie Earle, playing alongside Vinnie Jones, who was Wales. And up front, you had Marcus Gale for Jamaica and John Fashanu for England. There you are. That's our international Wimbledon
11. No messing with that team. One obscure fact to finish it off with. Leo and I, or even Leonardson and I, shared the same birth date. Exactly the same date.
And I think the question
same is, hospital and same time. It's amazing. He's actually Mark Lewison.
What went wrong?
Boom, boom. Okay.
Very similar height, the pair of them.
Stop it now. I was there to tell us when they had their debut.
If you put two
and Townsend got sent off, got big one sacked. We won 4-3 when Villa were 3-1 up. Yeah. Hilarious Tuesday night.
That was a brilliant game.
Possibly one of the only decent games at Selhurst. But that's a topic for another time.
The best game at Selhurst ever, just for your point. Dons 4, Palace 0.
5.
Best game at Selhurst. No, that was the away game. When you're talking us actually playing at Selhurst as our home game, then it was the 4-0 win where Robbie Earle scored 2 brilliant headers.
Topic for another pod. Okay, let's wrap it up tonight. Excuse me. Wrapping it up tonight with some numbers. I'm not going to start with Adam because I always do. Let's start with Niall. And Niall's number for this week is number 9, hence the reference in the opening thing.
Is it a very famous but immensely poor Beatles song?
No, it's not.
Is it the number of games we've gone unbeaten, Mark Lewis?
No, it's not either.
Is it the amount of goals Asal's got?
It is the number of goals that Asal's got as top four so far. Goals in the last 9 games, 9 goals overall.
There you go.
Pretty special. Okay.
But of course, if you want to buy any player, buy Hudlin. Hudlin, you know, if that's the one to go for, if at any point you're thinking of that, it sounds seriously overrated. And it's a known fact that us, who are all football geniuses, know that he's just not the player you should be looking at. So look at him, or I'm trying to think of who else we could possibly look at.
And his temperament stinks. Yeah.
That's it. He's bound to get sent off, so definitely not worth it.
Nathan Broome. He's a great keeper. Yeah.
Yeah. Nathan Broome. He's great up front. Play Nathan Broome up front. That's the one you want to go for. Definitely. I can't think of anywhere else that I'd rather have up front. Who's the other player that we had? There were 2 players with exactly the same name. We got rid of one who was really rubbish last season, and the other ones?
Don't know.
Up front.
Doesn't help you move things on, does it?
No, he doesn't. You've got to jump in there, Mark. What's the number?
That number is 83.
Good year,
83. I've gone 83. Go on, Matt. You first.
83. Jeez, I haven't got a clue.
83 relates to the current team, literally the current team, the 11 that played at Tranmere.
That's not the combined age.
I reckon that's the combined age of the back four.
Niall Cooper has it bang on. It is the combined age of the back four.
Or is it the year that me and Matt were mascots?
Well, no, it's not. You got it right.
Yes, it is.
Ogundore, 20. Callum Bye, 23. Riley Towler, 20. Hussein Bila, 20 as well.
Jeez.
Pretty impressive.
Very.
Possibly the youngest back four we've fielded since Ed Harris and Fraser Franks played centre-back against
Crawley Town.
Playing for Crawley. And we beat them 2-1 at King's Meadow.
And that was a famous...
I, d- I don't remember when we agreed that maths would be part of this podcast. That's the thing that's annoying me now.
I'm sorry, but 20 plus 20 plus 20 plus 23 isn't maths.
Yes, it is.
Common sense. sounds
quite complicated to me.
It's not complicated. 20 plus 20 plus 20 plus 23 is not complicated maths.
I didn't say it was complicated. I said I didn't agree that we'd have maths on the podcast.
I did. It was in a small print. Definitely there.
And then finally,
next week it's quadratics.
So I'm last now. So basically, make the stupidest person go last.
Self-proclaimed stupidest person, really. Adam's number is 3.
Isn't that the magic number?
The magic number. Yes.
Once again, it's already been mentioned on the pod tonight.
It's been on the podcast already.
Adam, how can you not know this? It's been on the
thing. Me and Matt are busy. We're on WhatsApp telling each other all about it all the time right now. I can't believe it. How can Adam possibly forget on this one?
Oh, I don't know what you've talked. No, 3, okay.
Oh, dear.
It's so poor, isn't it, Matt? He can't remember it.
I have no idea what the answer is. Anyone else?
See, if I say anything now, Mark, I'll be letting people know that I might not have had a complete clue about it either. So I'm just going to keep.
I don't want to embarrass people by answering it, Mark. You just say the answer.
Yeah, I'm with Matt. It's like, you know, all those listeners out there. We don't want to ruin it for them.
The answer is number of clean sheets in the league.
Yes, in a row. Number of clean sheets in a row, Adam.
Adam, how could you not have known that?
Terrible.
Oh. I think it might have been the number of Scottish internationals we've ever had, but like that wouldn't have been the answer. That would have been wrong.
Gentlemen, once again, it's been a pleasure. I'd love to say. I'd be lying though.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just thinking it's the number of people who haven't been affected by the Qatar World Cup.
In the whole world. That's a good shout. On that bombshell, we say thank you to Mr. Matt Cooper. Thank you to Mr. Niall Cooper. Thank you to Mr. Adam Proctor. We've been the same old Wombles. This has been episode 14. Stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you next week.